from the central level to commune level. So we already have the strong relationship between the NTP and the other organization. For example, women union. I would know the women union because by the some surveillance in Vietnam, they saw that the women they have the good knowledge on TB. Next, the Ministry of Education 3 years ago, we put the knowledge on TB program to the lesson from the school. Next, the Ministry of Police for the TB in the jail, especially in rehabilitation center, especially in the south of Vietnam. Besides it, we also have the international partner for the MDR-TB. I would show you a chart instead of an overview for the MDR plan in Vietnam. A lot of activity need for carry out the MDR plan in Vietnam. But we would like to know that we organize three main activity. First, administrative document development. Next, the human resource development, and the last is the premises building. And in the pink area, you can see the name of the international partnership who help us more instance for our action. In detail, for the preparation step, first we organize a workshop on the programmatic management of drug resistance in the year 2005, supported by WHO, Green Light Committee, CANCV, and Royal Netherlands Embassy. Next, we also organize the surveillance for the drug susceptibility testing in the year 2005-2006. And according corresponding to the result, we estimated in Vietnam the prevalence of the MDR-TB cases is about more than 6,000 cases. But in some special area, for example, in Ho Chi Minh City, we found that the MDR-TB is higher than the other part of Vietnam. The next is we also organized the surveillance on circulation of second light drug in the free market. And in big city, and the second light drug were using in popularity in private sector in big city, for example, in Ho Chi Minh City and in Hanoi, the capital. And that project supported by the CANCV, not only a grant but also on technical assistance. Besides the NTP, development for 5 year period from the year 2007 to 2011, the MDR-TB has been put in the master plan, and we decided to organize the pilot study for the MDR plan in the 5 big cities, Hanoi Capital, Thanh Hóa, Đà Nẵng, and Ho Chi Minh City, and Cần Thơ. And the development plan supported by CANCV, WHO, CDC, and we also invited two financial consultants from the free company. And The next activity is the administrative document. The development plan of the TB for the period 2007 to 2011 were approved and funded by the Vietnamese government. Also, Global Fund Round 6, WSO, CANCV, and USAID. Besides it, we also developed the national guideline on MDR-TB activity, and we got the technical assistance from CANCV and WHO experts. And this guideline is on printing. Besides it, we also developed the laboratory standard operational procedure, and we got the support from supranational reference laboratory Adelaide from Australia. By the support from Green Light Committee, the NTP in Vietnam contracted the second line drug procurement with IDA. The other activity is infection control policy and adjustment to the legislation regarding to HDR and using the second line drug on free markets is under development. And on human resources development, we already organized a national task force with the full training and went for study tour in Philippines, Latvia, and Korea. The workforce for the first pilot site in Ho Chi Minh City, where the prevalence of the MDR-TB is higher, the highest in Vietnam. We need the 4 doctors, 16 nurses, and 3 community consultants. And now we already send the personnel to Philippines, Latvia, for a few visits. And our staff supported by WHO, Latvia, and Philippine NTPs for their study. We also sent 2 doctors to Cambodia, the neighbor country, to do few visits, also practice on management of the MDR in community. And this trip supported by CANCV, also Cambodia NTP. We also send a laboratory technician to Botswana to study about the infection control. And by using the grant from CANCV, we also train 3 community consultants.
And 2 minutes.
Yeah. About reminders, in Ho Chi Minh, the MDR ward were built in the year 2007 with 40 beds. The equipment, for example, the 5 distinguished and oxygen is ongoing to set up. The infection control is checking with the technical support from CANCV, DNV, Norway, and USAID. We also upgraded the biosafety of the Phamongkat Hospital. And also building the new biosafety laboratory at grade 3 with the support by the BEPFA granted through CANCV. The challenges, now we face with some challenges. First, the task force, all members in task force on table, they ship to other office. Next, even though we have money, but we have not done to use it due to the new procedure in Mr. Minister of Health. The urgent step of us, first, we will reorganize national level of MDR task force by training and need from technical support from the partnership. Next, to speak up the financial administrative procedure with the Minister of Health. The third is to develop a more alternative solution for the funding if the, we can use the money on time. And the last is develop a more alternative plan in Ho Chi Minh City if the second line drug come to us on February the year 2009, but MDR will not be ready to use. And the next step of us, we will organize a meeting on research agenda for MDR project in Ho Chi Minh City with the Vietnam Found Organization, CanCV, CDC Cambodia, and WHO on this November. Next, we still operate for the MDR war in Ho Chi Minh City. And finally, training for MDR staff, also start treatment for MDR patients on March the year 2009. And we will still have support from clinical management experiences from Cambodia and TP who proceeded of us. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. So unless we have burning questions or clarification now, we can go, we can continue and we can have a full discussion after the series of presentations, the first set. Next we have Sok Tim, Dr. Sok Tim from Cambodia, who is the director of the Medical Research Institute.
Okay, first of all, I would like to thank for the session organizer that provided me the opportunity to attend this session. So I apologize that I sent in the abstract late, so my abstract was not included in the the 39 IULTD book. So anyway. I would like to present the universal access to the MDR-TB in Cambodia pioneered by the Cambodian Health Committee. And we will also change our name to Global Health Committee very soon. The content of this presentation is one, I would like to update you a little bit about the basic information about Cambodia. And number two is about MDR-TB Cambodian overview. And the three is about preliminary outcome, and the last point is about conclusion. Cambodia, as you know, that located in Southeast Asia with the approximately 13 million population with 181 square kilometer, we are one among the 22 top countries with high burden of TB. TB in Cambodia situation, the incidence of all form is about 500 per 100,000 population. Smear positive rate is 220 per 100K. And the prevalence of all form is 665 per 100,000 population, and the mortality rate is 92 per 100K. For the TB and HIV, in the country, the HIV positive among the TB patients were approximately 10%. This is the source collected by CNAT, and the TB among HIV AIDS patients is about 15% CNAT source also in 2007. But for our site, for our program, that we start this program in 2004 to 2008, we have two provincial program for the heart clinic. Inspiring, as you see on the top one, we have total HIV positive patient 1,404 from 2004 to 2008. We have 343 TB diagnosis among this HIV positive case. That's about 24%. And in the other province, also rural, near the beach of Cambodia, called Kampot, we have total of HIV positive patient is 1,200, and we have 222 patient diagnosis of approximately 18% TB. The detection rate, Cambodia as a whole, this is for the national program, the detection rate is 65.4%. And the cure rate for the current situation is approximately 85%. But for our CHC program, our Cambodian Health Committee program, we have nuclear detection rate approximately 75% in the two catchment areas with the population approximately 1 million. And we have the cure rate of 95%. MRTB in Cambodia, I would like to take this opportunity to say thank you to Dr. Didier Lauriat, you see with the white here over there. He's the pioneer one to develop the MDR-TB program for us Kameya study in Cambodia. And we found that approximately 2% of the naive co-infected TB HIV have MDR-TB. And the other one for the national TB program, they have done the drug surveillance survey in 2006, but the study has not yet complete. But the temporary result, it indicated 1.6% of new TB patients never treated before, newly diagnosed with MDR-TB. So we believe that among those who relapse and failure case, the percentage should be higher. And the history of MDR-TB issues in Cambodia, CHC as the local NGO in Cambodia, we apply, we pioneered this MDR-TB. We submit the protocol to the Green Light Committee twice. First one is to have the treatment for our Kameya study, the clinical trial in Cambodia. With the 30 patients we plan, based on our estimation by then. And the second application is to get universal access to everybody in Cambodia to get MDR treatment. Because we feel guilty when we provide MDR-TB treatment service to the people who participate in the study, but we don't provide same service to other people who not participate in the study. That's why the scan application is submitted and got approved. We also received financial support from UNITED to sponsor the cost of treatment for 100 patients, but for other 30 patients was financially supported by the clinical trial. We also received private donation from a rich family in the United States, you know, from Bread and NGs to support the operational costs, the patient follow-up costs. The Green Light Committee has conducted evaluation twice for our program, and it said that one of the best. CCMDR-TB program overview. We give you the overall view of using successful community-based TB program and research infrastructure to provide universal access to MDR-TB care. The infrastructure and the communication, this is the elements, the special important element for the program, like the first starting point. We defined the MDR treatment site in Cambodia. The whole Cambodia, as you know, that we have 181,000 square kilometer. We plan to have 8 MDR-TB treatment sites. But generally, we establish 6 sites now, and 2 more we have to go soon. And totally, we have 39 isolation rooms available. And we break this into the hospital-based and the community-based treatment. As you see that we have 51% of our patients treated hospital-based, and 49% of our patients were treated at the community-based. For the network, why we create this network? The network is to, because MDR-TB in Cambodia is very new, so not very many body know the service available. So we create this network in Cambodia, from the national level up to the provincial level, to the OD level and health center level, and also among the NGO working at the community base. And we also provide training education to the public and the medical professional. And we also establish a case alert system And we also developed the responsive acts, you know, based on when we have received a call or case alert, we go immediately to the software they call us. We do the site visit, we do sputum collection, we do case preparations.
2 minutes, Dr. Tim.
Okay. Sorry. We have a, we also initiate the MDR-TB management committees, as you can see in this slide. And we have this case finding. We give priority to those who failure to category 1, category 2, and close contacts. And for the case preparation, we do like this. We have diagnosis, patient chart, education, screening, patient control, adherence, MDR management committee, and monitoring and supervision system. For the lab test at the baseline, periodically controlled during the treatment, we have this. And for the screening, all the close contact, you see, this is the basic why we do the screening, and we take this very seriously at the community level. This is the dot marks, you know, when the dot supporter or patient supporter provide first dot, they have to tick. The pink is for the evening, and the green one is for the morning. So this one, green, and this is the treatment regimen. I'm sorry because of the time constraint. This is the treatment contract, part of the program initiative, and this is the inpatient, one of the elements of the program. And the outpatient, we have two different kinds of outpatient consideration in our program. Those who have been newly diagnosed and treated at the community level, we call it an outpatient also. But those who treated at the hospital and at the child home, we also call it outpatient. This is the isolation we build at home. You know, patient doesn't have to be away from the house, but it has to be well ventilated. And outpatient, this is the criteria that we manage the outpatients. And this is the outcome we have so far. We have 79 case notifications, and 60% were put on treatments. And we have 64 for die on therapy, we have 4 cures so far. And the conclusion is that we have a mixing approach, hospital-based and community-based is the new tool to really respond to the need of the patient. And we feel that it is a need a new viral TB drug with less side effect. You know that the second line have very terrible side effect and a very long-term treatment. We should have less side effect, less combination, and low cost. Flexible practical treatment strategy can reduce much of the adherence issues, like you see the mixing hospital approach and community approach. But when we're doing this, the cost has been doubled. Mm-hmm. And we need, in Cambodia, rapid culture and DST. So this is an acknowledgement to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll move on to Dr. Rostislav Mitrofanov from Partners in Health in Russia.
Good afternoon, colleagues. I would like to thank previous presenters with their presentations, because we actually, without consulting, but we have similar structure of our presentations, but each country has its different problems. So I'm a physician from Russia, working there as a TB coordinator for Partners in Health Boston, United States. At the same time, I'm a part-time scientific researcher for Novosibirsk TB Research Institute and certified TB specialist licensed to practice in Russia. Later in the presentation, it will be clear why it's kind of important combination. Russia, or better to say, Soviet Union, has established in 1930s specialized medical services, federal TB services with long history. It was one of the revolutionary steps in health reforms at that time, and when authorities provided nationalized private resorts for TB patients' treatment. And most important of achievements from that time, we have right now that we have around 9,000 TB doctors, and interestingly, we have five federal TB research institutes. It's important. Thanks. Situation with tuberculosis was always a problem in Russia, but with dissolution of Soviet Union, TB epidemiology dramatically worsened. We have around 8,000 primary MDR cases per year. So in order to fight this epidemic, we have planned to enroll around 24,000 MDR-TB patients to the treatment. And 24 territories of Russia out of 88 already approved for treatment of 6,000 patients. And we have, we'll be looking forward to approval a few more. And why Russian existing TB services need to be approved by a Green Line Committee, which everybody probably knows that it's an international committee which supervises assuring quality second-line drugs for lower prices to the regions and countries which demonstrated preparedness to treat MDR-TB by international standards. Just necessary to mention that one of the reasons that after collapse of the Soviet Union, we have TB services were disintegrated, and especially was significant disruption of regular drug supply, which forced our doctors to practice some treatment which were far away from standards. Prisons and civilian population in Tomsk region were selected by international NGOs for urgent TB assistance. This territory is equal to state of Montana, or approximately 60% of territory of France, with scarce population of 1 million people. And this is the history of development of this project from 1996. And at the beginning of this project, the situation with delivery of drugs through official channels was so poor that some drugs were delivered by suitcases from NGOs. And here, numbers of tuberculosis incidents, which you can say it's quite high. In Russia in general, which is red, it's relatively stable for last years, and you may notice that Siberian region, which is light blue, has significantly higher TB incidence, and Tomsk region, which belongs to Siberia, has lower TB incidence and appears not to be rising, despite that Siberian regions in general have rising. Yes. So, percentage of MDR-TB among new cases in Novosibirsk, in Tomsk, quite impressive. They hit up to 17%, which is describes situation for people which is in TB control. Retrospectively, we can call this as a phase one organization of this MDR-TB component for Tomsk project. When we right now we have approximately 1,200 patients on treatment, and 630 from them completed treatment. And the results of the first cohort of 244 patients shows that almost 78% had treatment success. And together with other PIH partners and health projects in the world, especially in Peru, it demonstrates that MDR-TB treatment can be very successful. We have a lot of information, such as articles and internet resources, which describe TOMS project quite thoroughly. I just want to underline that key elements to success were just strict DOT treatment in urban and rural settings, aggressive treatment by second-line drugs of MDR-TB, and also aggressive, intensive and effective treatment of adverse events. Also, key element was the organization of daily social support for outpatient treated MDR-TB patients when they are smear negative. It was a priority for PIH to organize outpatient treatment. And also some managerial improvement which allowed us to have a steady drug supply for prison and civilian population. Assisted to of creation central TB drug warehouse for this whole TOMS territory, and it provided on demand all medications. We have no interruptions for drugs.
3 minutes, Ross.
Okay. Some obstacles we met since the implementation of this project was not in an empty place. We were working with doctors with certain experience and was a large TB community with their own approaches for treatment. So we accounted that all our positive experience, we had difficulties to provide it as a feedback for high-level policy TB institutes, as well as we couldn't secure additional resources from local authorities because they said if you have donor money, implied actually that if you have donor money in territory, we not less eager to provide our own resources. Since we have different approaches which were different from TB services in Russia, we decided that it would be a good experience for TB specialists in Russia to be trained and exposed to TOMS experience. And after communications with five TB federal research institutes, we organized 10-day training for all 88 territories, five trainings with each institute. And we had big support from Ministry of Health and Ministry of Justice and Russian Academy of Medical Science, which issued special executive orders which allowed the staff to participate in such trainings. And the generous support of Eli Lilly Foundation made possible to conduct this training with high international standards. And this is a picture of actual training in one of the institutes.
1 minute. Okay.
Time is fast. After that, we realized that our trainees, which obtained knowledge, they had lack of authorities to implement knowledge in their own territories when they went back. So after conversations with NoCBS TB Research Institute, it was made a decision to, and we're right now creating the International Training Center based on this institute in the process of creation, which will allow after that legitimize authority for trainers and trainees and also facilitate issue of instructions and executive orders for other territories which help to fight these kind of problems. Further activities of this training center based on TOMS experience and federal power of authority of this international for this NoCBS TB Institute will be our advances in management of XDR-TB, also experience of TB HIV infection and interdepartmental configuration of prison-civilian. While realizing this project, we found that pilot projects are always important for MDR treatment implementation by international standards, because each territory differs, and involvement in an NGO in this process with has you know, such positive influence on this. And all these efforts could be described in four directions. Then when we were acting together with authorities, it was vertical cooperation. When right now an institute involved in studying of Tomsk project results, it is a parallel cooperation. And when we're inviting other territories to study our experience in Tomsk, it's horizontal cooperation. And our NGO institute cooperation could attract new stakeholders to TB control. And at the end, I would say that I would kind of advocate to downshifting of NGO specialists, which will be involved in state activities, in activities of certain institutes. It will help them to more promptly to react on changing conditions in MDR-TB control. Thank you.
Thank you. And last in this section, we have Dr. Agnes Gebhardt from KNCB in the Netherlands.
Good afternoon. So I've been listening with much interest to the presentations before, because we had a presentation from Vietnam, which is about a project which is still in the preparation phase, moving towards real programmatic treatment of management of MDR-TB. We heard about Cambodia, which is really getting it done now for the first period. And we heard about a long-standing established program which is now spreading its wings and providing opportunities for others. Now, I would like to give the a perspective from a technical assistant agency, realizing that there may be many more perspectives on this. The outline of my presentation is about, I will start with the partnership challenge, a grassroots experience. Steps in the partnering process, technical assistance needs for programmatic management of drug-resistant TB, TA in program phases, and how does it work in practice? Well, I will not go to that because we heard sufficiently from that, I would say. And if we have time enough, we will have also some food for discussion. Now, this practical experience is about an integrated rural development project, a small project, which was taking place halfway in the 90s in central Vietnam. I came working for a partnership of seven Dutch NGOs who were doing a project in a province in central Vietnam. What was the partnership about? It was about integrated rural development, which has many aspects. And that's why the partnership approach was needed, because it was aimed at capacity building of the local government. So the local government and mass organizations were involved. It was about new integrated development approaches. So this diversified TA was necessary, with complementary strengths of those participating organizations. Pooled funding, which allowed technical assistance to be put on the ground, to have people on the ground there. And the special project environment working with Vietnam made the pooling of experiences of those organizations worthwhile. Now, the principles and mechanisms of collaboration were described in MOUs, and each partner expected something out of this based on what was described in the project document. And the strategic approach was agreed. It was agreed there would be bottom-up methods, which would then be further developed on the spot. Well, I said there were seven Dutch NGOs from different walks of life, I would say. The Vietnamese partners were equally diverse. And what happened? The project was indeed implemented between 1994 and 1997. And some important elements have shown to be sustainable, are still ongoing there. Part of the project expanded to six other provinces and is actually still continuing in three provinces. Some elements of the project were taken up by the national NTP nationwide, like strengthening of basic health systems in remote and mountainous areas. And the project catalyzed relations between the province and many other development and supporting agencies. All in all, quite a successful endeavor, I would say. But the partnership of seven Dutch NGOs, which initiated it all, did not survive the second project year. One of them took over, in the end, the administrative fee, one of them took over, but the partnership fell apart. Now, what happened? Content-wise, it was all described in a three-year framework for integrated rural development, but everybody had his own interpretations of this framework. The need for partnership was agreed by all. The memorandum of understandings was people had different interpretation of that. The expectations among the partners of what they would get out of it was very different, and the strategic approaches turned out not to be reconcilable. The organizations involved had all different values, philosophies, and organizational cultures. So all in all, a worthwhile experience for all sides, but as a partnership, it was short-living. Now, if you go into the partnership process, it's only one theoretic slide here. There should be something like a shared vision or common goals. Then each organization, which I here depict with a yellow one on my computer, it's a yellow one and a blue one. Each organization does its own situational assessment, environmental and stakeholders assessment, and identifies possible partners. And then possible partners go and sit together, which makes yellow and blue become green, and explore the organizational values, philosophies, culture. They identify common goals and agenda, and they decide that there's indeed something they could do together, for in which each organization has something to win and each organization has something to give. Then, of course, you define objectives, etc., and you start your joint activities. This model I adjusted from the International Institute of Rural Reconstruction from the Philippines. Important here is that also periodic evaluation of the partnership is jointly done. Now, I would like to come a little bit to what the specific needs are for technical assistance for the development and maintenance of starting up and maintenance of activity or of programs for programmatic management of drug resistant TB. And then it's important that you define three phases. That is really different from the preparation phase, from the startup phase, and the continuation phase. And I would like to underline that generally there's a gross underestimation for the need for TA. Presently, I'm representing KNCV at the Greenlight Committee, and so I see many applications, and what you see is that there's a real need for technical assistance in each and every aspect of the control of MDR-TB. So in the beginning, it is about the design and implementation of drug resistance surveys in different groups of patients in order to be able to design your regimen and to have a rational approach towards treatment. Laboratory capacity building, your first workshops, sensitizing people, getting the ideas. Then strategic planning, mobilization of financing, but also addressing TB-HIV, TB control in prisons, public-private mixed dots as applicable in the country. I'm convinced that in all this, there's an important role for the program, for the National TB Program or the Ministry of Health or whoever is the pivotal organization pulling this wagon, that indeed they should not only pull their own wagon, but they also should guide and be active in the in the management of their technical assistants and their technical assistance partners. And then there's a task for the technical assistance agencies to coordinate their efforts, not only with the program, but also between each other.
2 minutes.
Okay. Now, in the similarly, there are, in the startup phase, all kinds of issues which need attention, for example, also the data management, the drug quality and procurement, and coordination. And in the expansion phase, you have seen what that entails from the Tomsk example. So now what is very important to realize is, of course, that not one organization can provide all the TA which is needed. TA agencies can decide to diversify themselves or to make strategic partnerships with other organizations. For each, whatever you choose or want to do, is long-term commitment is needed. I already said that the coordination between those technical assistance partners is necessary, but what is very, very necessary is that they coordinate their messages. So if the one says that it should be like this, the other shouldn't say that it should be like that. There should be real coordination, and then it's the National TB Program who should orchestrate this this coordination. Okay, I put in an example, I'll show that out. What I would like to talk about it's not only the countries which do their coordination, but also, or their partnering and partner, but also technical assistance agencies. And I would like to take the example of Partners in Health. Mercedes is working with Partners in Health. And Keynes VTB Foundation. We have a common vision, like a world free of MDR-TB. We do our own situational assessments and environmental stakeholder assessment, and we identified possible partners, and that made us meet and sit together and see how we as organizations can strengthen our effort to result in an earlier reaching of the goal of a world free of MDR-TB. We found common ground, like in research, capacity building for programmatic management of drug-resistant TB, and we defined some strategic approaches. For example, we all agree that we should be working evidence-based and that we support and work in line with the WHO guidelines on drug-resistant TB. We have specific contributions, and we developed some joint activities on research is ongoing, e-room, sharing of training and health education materials, but also this symposium together with Lana and Gargioni. So I have here some food for discussion. I would like to give three statements to you. One is the main national stakeholders should play an active role to identify needs and opportunities and select and invite partners and guide the process of partnership building and coordination. The program is at the steering wheel. TA providers have an obligation to tune their voices in the direction of the Ministry of Health or the NTP, and a funded, jointly developed medium-term strategic national development plan is an important tool to achieve and fund these effective partnerships.
Thank you. So we're going to take 15 minutes for discussion and then move on to the second section. Do we have any questions? And I'd welcome anyone who has questions to come up to the microphone. And while someone comes up, I have a question for Dr. Tran Ngoc Bu, if you don't mind. I'm not sure where he's sitting. I was curious, if I can take the chair's prerogative to ask a first question, if you mentioned, where is Dr. Bu? Sorry, there he is. You mentioned the visits or in connections with the Latvia and Philippines experience. And how do you see, I'm curious, how do you see that continuing? Do you see there being a need for continuing communication with those teams And I'm thinking of, you know, what kind of funding will be needed for, to support also that kind of collaboration.
Yes, you.
We can hear you.
Yes. As you know, in Vietnam, the MDR TB is rises so many years ago. But follow the former leader, the, at that time we just implement the dose strategy for the own patient. But now Vietnam just nearly escaped from the the low income country. So the government also from the community, they need for the treatment for the MDR. And in the mass media, especially in newspaper, a lot of patients, they call for MDR projects. For this, so we have not more experiences from the organization, also from management, the MDR. So we have to need the assistance from all the partner in around the world. For example, last year, because the NTP in Vietnam, through the introduction from CanCV and from WHO in Vietnam, we understand that in last year, also in Philippines and my neighbor in Cambodia, they get ahead of us so many steps. So by the consultant from, especially from CanCV, we send the people to there, to the country, to study how to manage, how to organize the MDR. Also, we also put the MDR as the master plan. And luckily for us, after one round disapproved by the Global Fund, but the next step we the plan of us approved by Global Fund, and now we have. Money on. Also, we have the support from technician assistant from our friend, international friend, and we believe in the future we will organize. Also, we will manage the MDR plan in Vietnam so well. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Ernie, please, would you come up to the microphone so we can hear you?
Or, I think my voice is
okay.
Oh, sorry. It's for the video.
If you don't mind, we want to see you.
Thank you.
Any microphone for you?
Since you continue insisting, I think I have two questions. One for the dog who's still standing. Cambodia. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I thought I saw a picture of, I don't know whether it's an isolation small house for MDR at community level. One, I would like to understand how possible it is and how cost-effective it is, because when you have it at community level, it means maybe it might just be used by that particular family, but not by many, many others. The other one is to a colleague from Russia. I don't know who owns that project. The ownership, it seems, doesn't coming out very strong. Hence, maybe the Russian government, in terms of support. I was looking at external support against internal support. I know Russia gives out a lot of money externally. What about for the internal component? How is the funding going on? And does the disintegration of the Soviet Union has any bearing on the same? Thank you.
Sokteam, would you come to the podium, please? So the first question for Sokteam.
Thank you for the question. I think because we have 10 million issues to discuss in the 10 minutes, so I did not show every aspect of the community's base. As you see in the pictures, you can see that that particular family has built due to their own resources. And if you see a rich one, you have a concrete isolation roof. If you have a medium one, you can have a thatch roof with a bamboo wall. And if you go to the very poor one, you can see a hut with the plastic roofs. But I think this month in November, I will show that kind of presentation in Vietnam. So you will see the different aspect of how we design the isolation room at the community level based on family resources. We have one supporting strategy is that if the family could not afford, and then the program may take initiative. But we have to share whatever the family can share. They have to come up as a partnership. But the initiative has to come from both parties. We look at the infection control issues. The patient we look at from their own resource affordable. So the answer is that, yes, a different family resource can build a different kind of isolation room. So based on the income of the family and family evaluation, and we have extra resources to support those who cannot afford at all. And we also using the, we call the village health supporting group in the community, because in each village, we have selected two people, one male and one female, to be the key person in that village. So we use that kind of network to support the initiative, to support the patient, not only for the project period, but in the long term issues. Thank you for that.
Thank you. Dr. Mitrofano.
Thank you for your question. First question was about Russia, which became right now a donor of in the international community, and as I wrote correctly, that how's you know, funding goes for internal things. I just want to underline that Russia claims that it has big financial resources, and it's right now politically and financially very active abroad. Inside, it's also we feel that TB services and other services have a lot of new equipment and also medications. But since they're working in a very strict system of budgeting, sometimes it takes up to 2 years to change certain lines for funding. And for example, Partners in Health increase social support for TB patients, and if this line is not in the budget of certain territory, it takes sometimes up to 2 years to get some funding from the territory, internal, the local money to finance this line. And of course, after dissolution of Soviet Union, dramatic decrease of funds to TB services hurt them a lot, but I think that in recent time it was increased, my colleagues could correct me, around 20 times more than it was. It right now around 1.2 trillion of rubles, which is I think equal to $300 million or something, which is significant amount.
Okay, thank you. We'll take a few more questions. We have 6 minutes.
Thank you so much. My question is to Professor Din, and I, Dr. Sokteam. I appreciate that in Cambodia you mixed the community-based dots as well as some of the patients were provided initial treatment in the hospital. So were the people who were treated at home, was the treatment outcome better given the inadequate infection control measures in hospital settings? And the people who were treated in the hospitals, did they manifest any more infectious diseases? And the second question is to Professor Din, that in Vietnam, did you incorporate community-based dots, a mix of approach, like, I mean, community-based as well, or home-based as well as the clinical approach? Thank you.
Because my memory is so short, I have to answer.
So, thank you for a very important question. This come up into operational research issues that we still compiling all the data, and we will have a big show on this maybe next year. But yes, for sure, we have treated the patient who admit in the hospital for a certain period of time, and a group of patients that treated at home, and the response to the treatment and the outcome. If we compare on the very unofficial data, we see that those who are treated at home have very, very fast recovery and able to work quickly compared to the group of people who treated at the hospital base. Plus, we don't have any patient who has a super bacterial infection at home. Compared to the group that treated at the hospital, we have about 10-20% of them have super bacterial infection, the hospital bacterial situation. Pseudomonas is very big issues. So it is a best challenge for the people who treated the patient in the hospital for the moment. We tend to subsidize that. If the patient is well educated and they understand, they should be treated at home better, because when they take the drug, they feel better, they can do something, they walk around, not just sleeping on the bed. Like in the hospital, because of the infection control measure, the staff, everything, they take the measure very seriously at the hospital. Compared to the community level, people live in the village, you know, very isolated, not like in the city. So they can work in their own field behind the house, you know, doing garden. So the health become like fast recovery. So this is our notice. Next year we will show that kind of data. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Bu.
Yes. Thank you for your question. I would recommend that the role of the community on the direct the observed treatment performance and nowadays focuses by the NTP. I would explain clearly a little bit, because in the past a lot of the leader, a local leader of the NTP, they like to get the better result in treatment. So they don't like use the community, the community based on dot treatment. Even though we only read a lot of lessons from Thailand and all the countries in the world, but in comparison with the reason in Vietnam, for example, the cure rate only more than 90%, 90, yeah. So in comparison with the previous result, all the result, if they use the community base, yes, the result is a little bit lower. But now the NTP, they understand, because everything changed in Vietnam. People, they don't, a lot of people, they don't like working in the field, and they migrate to the big city for work. So they have not, they didn't stay stable than before. My mean is the temporarily resident proportion is higher than before. So the NTP, they understand that problem, and they move, they already move the policy, and they use the, they like using the community, community for the dose. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Two more short questions, short responses, hopefully. Please.
Thank you. My name is Rehab Chimzizi, MSHTP Gap, Ghana. I don't know the question should, or where it should go, maybe WHO, Green Light Committee, probably I'll just ask to partners here, Russia. I think when I was entering this meeting, my main interest is to see the, how countries are managing in terms of treatment success. Because I think what I do believe is that the program that keeps the patient alive, you do attract more patients rather than the program that kills more people. But I was actually impressed, I think, in Russia that probably you are curing more cases. Probably the figure you gave was about 54%. My interest, because I'm coming from a country that want to start a DOTS Plus program, but I think you want to make sure that we're doing a program that will actually cure more patients than killing more patients. I don't know how you manage to have a good treatment outcome. Is it the regimen you're using? Is it the management of the complications when patients are on treatment? Or I think I just want to learn from you how you manage that, because I think that's important for us to learn, say, probably you may have better money than most of our countries, but probably the basics that cannot use too much money. Thank you.
Dr. Mitrofanov, can I pass that to Dr. Gebhardt?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for this question. Actually, I think that there's many issues which go into this one question. One is that the results which are presented, the first results which were presented from the GLC pilots, of which Tomsk is one of the first, the first results were not so very encouraging. We had something between 50 and 70%, just over 60% cure rates, which, of course, may lead to thoughts, as you say, if you have such a low cure rate, you create maybe a lot of more resistance. What do those cases do? They're around, spreading it around. Other people die. So what is the gain of your program, except from the point that a patient would like to be cured and would like to take any chance which there is to get cured? But at this moment, the first cohorts consisted of people who had been treated many, many, many times and for a long time, living as a chronic case and taken any drug which was available to them, which created a lot of polydrug-resistant strain or multidrug-resistant, but not just resistant to two drugs, but resistant to six or to eight drugs. So you can expect that in a country which starts programmatic management of drug-resistant TB, even with very good drugs and good regimens, you will first have a period in which your treatment results will be maybe a little bit disappointing. But later on, you see that in programs which are running well, that they can reach something like 80%, and maybe even more, we will see in the future. So, and definitely in programs in countries where there is not a widespread use of the second-line drugs, especially the kanamycin, capremycin, and the higher generations or the newer generations, fluoroquinolones, in those countries, you will expect that you basically are able to cure nearly everybody. So it very much depends on the situation in Russia, where you have this long-standing use of all kinds of second-line drugs in the past, or that you're starting in a country like Tanzania, which doesn't have any second-line drugs. Except for maybe ciprofloxacin, which is no longer used for, which has just a very small, weak effect for TB. And so I think that you should look at the situation per country. And it also means that the regimens which can be used safely with good results in countries which with a low level of second-line drug resistance, those regimens can be much cheaper and much simpler and less toxic than the regimens used in countries where you have an initial level of drug resistance of six or seven or eight drugs. Does this answer your question?
You can continue talking after, perhaps. And one last question for this section.
Thank you very much. My name is Joseph Odhiambo. I come from Kenya. Thank you very much for sharing your experiences in Vietnam and also your experiences with partnership. Now, obviously, MDR-TB is a great threat to TB control in high-burden settings. But as the old saying goes, prevention is better than cure. And what I saw missing in this presentation is that where is the balance between treating those who have MDR-TB and laying a lot of investment in the preventive aspects of MDR-TB control, given that MDR-TB is preventable. It's failure of providers following guidelines and failure of patients following treatment guidelines. Thank you.
Would anyone like to? I know your experience is also with TB, not just MDR-TB. I don't know if you'd like to comment.
Comment from the field.
Yeah.
Here you come to the point. It's that I think the best way to prevent MDR-TB is to strengthening short-course chemotherapy right now through using in the right ways and follow the guideline, you know. So when the system has been strengthening and that has been implemented and the patient comply with the policy, everybody, not only the patient, the doctor, the nurse, the patient supporter, the communities, and the businessmen in the world, follow that, comply with that procedure, then we can treat the simple TB diseases. But come to our knowledge is that MDR-TB is, you all know that it's a man-made disease. But, you know, in some extent, this can be prevented. But it is too late now to rely that, you know, because many of us practicing, malpracticing in the past because we don't give away to a better dot program and utilizing the best knowledge that we should to treat and to care for our patient who have first simple TB disease and then develop into MDR disease. This we just pick up from what we from the negligence that we have in the past. So the MDR-TB right now is the result of our negligence in the past, directly or indirectly. It is, you know. So the best way to prevent it is to now look back to our regular TB program. We strengthen it, fix it, you know, assess the weakness. You know, if you see any flaw, fix it, okay, immediately and seriously, and then we can prevent the MDR-TB. I think this is the best message.
Thank you. Okay, so next we're going to go on to the another set of presentations, starting with Dr. Giuliano Gargioni from Switzerland. You can get out.
Wait for me.
You do escape. Escape.
Good afternoon. I'm working with the Stop TB department of WHO. And what I would like to share this afternoon with you is our experience in participation in partnering process at country level, particularly in situations where NGOs, civil society, and faith-based organizations play a very significant role in contributing to the health services. First of all, I would like to take a kind of snapshot of the situation of global health today. All of us will agree easily that the situation of global health has changed dramatically. There are now many partners, or at least many actors, that are trying to contribute to provide responses to global health needs in many different areas, in the area of advocacy, of prevention, of service delivery, of research and development. The involvement in health of non-governmental organizations is a fact, we could gather most likely all these actors under the definition of non-state sector providers or non-for-profit providers, and together with them we see today a significant participation of the civil society. What is underlying this effort? These efforts that are not only the technical efforts of the governments, of ministries of health, but the efforts of all the other partners, can be there at the same time because of shared value and goals, because of an attempt to have a mutual understanding, commitment, and the recognition that each partner may bring some comparative advantages to the common goal of fighting diseases. So I would summarize briefly some of the main challenges we are facing today in global health. I need to mention first the human resource crisis with the external and the internal brain drain, and the obvious need to engage all the healthcare providers. Secondly, I will mention a kind of paradoxical situation in terms of financial resources. We have moved from a situation where there was competition for scarce resources to a situation in which we have the paradox of low absorptive capacity at country level. And then we have the issue of adherence to treatment, which I like to mention more as the problem of continuum of care, from the health services to the family, with an opportunity, of course, for the family to relate back easily to the services, and the issue of quality of care. And we have then the issue of not just of the geographic coverage of services, but the issue of actual access and utilization of these services. This requires that services are designed around the patient and her or his family, and it requires the involvement of civil society. In preparing the global guidelines for community involvement, in WHO, we have clearly seen that a partnering movement, a partnering approach, is not just a matter of sound organizational arrangements. It's a matter of a vision. This came out very clearly also from the presentation of Agnes. So what should this vision be? What we have seen in reviewing a number of countries is that at the core of this shared responsibility is the recognition of the dignity of each person and the fact that there is already a social solidarity that people live and through which people face their struggle for the common good of the society, being health certainly part of this common good. But there is also a concrete direction to the process of partnering that is particularly important when a government decides to approach what I called before the non-state sector. And this principle says that a higher institution of level of the society, like, for example, a government, should support and promote what a lesser form of social organization can do in order to contribute to the common good. This, in social justice, is known as principle of subsidiarity, and it clearly defines what should be the principle underlying a partnership approach. Examples of a subsidiary approach have been in WHO, certainly the inclusion of community empowerment as an essential component of the Stop TB strategy. And this is an element that addresses directly the issue of a continuum of care and of quality of care at community level. And then we are also trying to encourage as much as we can partnering with the non-state health services provider in order to improve access and the utilization of services. These are three examples taken from an African context, Uganda, from an Asian context in Bangladesh, and from Mexico. But recently, WHO carried out a specific review on the situation of the collaboration between the faith-based organizations and the healthcare sector. And this gave amazing results, because out of the review of over 100 case studies, it came out that on average, faith-based organizations cover about 40% of healthcare in Africa alone. So they are clearly very significant partners in primary health care, and significant partners if we want to strengthen the health systems. It goes without saying that this is a partner that we can hardly do without if we want to achieve the MDGs. The findings of this report, which is titled Building from Common Foundations, situation of FBOs, but many of these findings extend and apply also to NGOs. The situation is that they often operate outside the governmental planning, and they are generally unrecognized, so they don't get an adequate share of public resources. There is indeed a recommendation from Global Health Initiative that they should be included in funding, but when we look at the share or the proportion of funds, for example, disbursed by the Global Fund that have gone today to faith-based organizations against the 40% of the national services they provide, this share is only 5%. So perhaps a very good bargain for governments, but certainly not a just situation. So, yet, we know that in a way all the partners I've mentioned, all the actors I've mentioned are working towards a common goal, and this common goal is the fact that communities may be better cared for. In Stop TB department in WHO, we can only mention a very long and very positive experience of collaboration with FBOs and NGOs, and very often we have recognized the comparative advantage of related to the fact that these organizations are often operational, they often operate in the most disadvantaged areas or within complex humanitarian emergencies. And they work there precisely because of their values and motivation. So we have now a clear policy of encouragement, and whenever we can, we try to catalyze a partnering approach at the country level. As a result of these various reports and studies and experiences and country reviews, there are clear WHO recommendations now on how to engage with FBOs and NGOs in national health planning. It is realistic to include these actors in national plans because, as I said, they provide 40% of the overall healthcare delivery. The healthcare they provide and their role should be seen as complementary to the healthcare provided by the public sector. And I would like to draw your attention to the third bullet, which I think is very important. It is a government role to ensure that services are delivered. It is not the government role to ensure that the government is the only or the sole healthcare provider. So this is very important because it implies that the government should also favor and support other healthcare providers. And again, fourth point is that this shouldn't be a big problem because governments are already dealing with mixed economies in health. I will not focus now on the private provision of services, but rather on how we can summarize the main issues around the partnering approach. Governments should recognize and support, as part of the public system, other actors that institutionally do not belong to the state. In a shorter sentence, to recognize the public function of private initiative. This can happen if partnerships are based on common goals and on mutual respect for each one's identity and roles. And really, partnership can make the most of what each partner can contribute. So we see synergy as well as complementarity. And this is a point that is challenging. We have to move from a paradigm of competition towards a paradigm of mutual support and collaboration. So when we say these things, clearly we are not in the domain, we are not in the area of technical arrangement or organizational arrangement. We are in the domain of decisions that are of ethical and political nature that we believe cannot be postponed at this point in time. This is only to mention what an example of a partnering approach that has been followed in several countries, in which we can recognize three phases that more or less have been mentioned already before. So an exploration in which we build a common vision and with the identification and the beginning of a dialogue with among the various potential partners. The important mapping of resources that should match what a national plan is for TB control or for TB HIV collaborative activities or for MDR-TB control. It is important because this is a stage that is very much synergistic with proposals to the Global Fund. And we have several examples, one will follow my presentation, of how this synergy between NGOs, government, international organizations can actually be an added value for the country proposal to the Global Fund. Then, of course, we have the management of the partnership, the implementation of activities, and at some point, if there is real local ownership for this initiative, we will end up having a kind of institutionalization with formal agreements and so on. These pictures are about, the first picture on the right is about a patient living in a very remote area in Swaziland. This is a presentation that will follow mine, being reached on a regular basis by sisters of Cabrini Ministries, so a faith-based organization that goes very far to visit each of these patients, and on the occasion of the partnering meeting in the capital city of Swaziland, sat for the first time and were able to discuss directly with government officials. Similar initiative with perhaps a different focus that I would like to mention now is the one of Peru, where the partnership provided the national plan and a national answer to the problem of TB. It clearly entailed a construction process for the partnership, but it has really created a space for dialogue and coordination. And of interest, the fact that there are obviously practical achievements, practical results. For example, local governments in Peru have now included budgets for TB prevention and control activities, or the public is much more aware about the disease and the preventive measures. My final slide is about the role that WHO, with also the support from the Stop TB partnership, can play at country level. Of course, we try to exploit at country level the role of neutral body and advisor. We support and support also with our own facilitation the efforts of partners towards partnership building. We work to catalyze and to mobilize resources towards the interaction, through the interaction with global health initiatives and donor agencies. We regularly coordinate technical assistance with partners, and we promote and support capacity building within the non-state sectors. And of course, we are ready to engage as partners ourselves at the strategic and technical level, and or we are ready to serve as the host organization providing the partnership secretariat and legal status. But this is obviously a choice of the country. Thank you.
And next we have Themba Dlamini from Swaziland.
Okay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Themba Dlamini, the National TB Program Manager from Swaziland. I'm just going to be sharing with you the Swaziland experience on how we formed the Stop TB partnership. My presentation will be will follow this outline. I'll just give you a brief background of the TB situation in the country and the rationale for forming the partnership. And then how did we go about forming the partnership and what outcomes we desired, a bit of achievements, challenges, and the next step. Swaziland is a small country in the southeast of sub-Saharan Africa. It is a small country like you can see there, which is landlocked, bordered by Mozambique in the east and the rest by South Africa. But this is Swaziland. I just thought maybe let me just make it bigger so that people don't remember somebody talking about partnership that occurred in a small dot. So that's the country. Before I actually continue with my presentation, I'd like to say, to allude to that in Swaziland, TB is a huge public health problem. We are faced with big challenges, especially with the high prevalence of HIV and AIDS. And for quite some time, the government of Swaziland hasn't been putting TB as a priority. So it has been one of those neglected diseases in the country, exactly on the margins. Hence, you are going to see the next slide, because what you're going to see there is really very disappointing, but I would like to assure you that there's a lot that we are working around. The problem is huge, but we are putting so many strategies in response, one of them being that of forming this Stop TB partnership. This is the situation in Swaziland. We have We notified 9,636 cases in 2007, and that brings the notification rate to about 1,100 per 100,000. And we registered 60 MDR cases, and the case detection rate is at 57%, and treatment success at 42%. And the HIV prevalence among TB patients is 79%. I know somebody has talked about this figure, that are we killing people or something, but just like I've just mentioned, that really TB hasn't been in the mainstream until about 2 years ago, when the government started realizing that there's a huge problem in the country. So we are not killing people, Ghana. The rationale for engaging different partners, some of the issues Dr. Kajoni has already mentioned are very generic. One, we realized as a country that we are being faced with a huge TB and HIV burden, and the NTCP performance indicators are way below the recommended global targets. And now Swaziland has got this ambitious plan to reach these targets before 2011. So now we thought bringing everybody together, like we have heard that these organizations, the FBOs, the NGOs, and the civil society are providing these services, actually even in the most remote areas. But most of the time you find that they are not even realized, and the efforts are not really coordinated. It's like the right arm not knowing what the other arm is doing. So now this is the first step to say everybody is here providing services, more than 40% of these services being provided by these organizations. Let's come together and then work together so that we know we follow one framework, we follow one country strategic plan. And again, the public sector needs to be complemented by these organizations. Once again, to the previous presentation, that the public sector is there to make sure that services are provided, but it doesn't mean all the services are provided by the public sector. So we realized that we need to form this partnership. So it started by building the vision. It started by recognizing the high burden of the problem in the country. And then as a country, the ministry through the NTP invited national and international partners to a dialogue to say, here we have a huge problem in this country. What can we do together? And then we identified partners who were already doing something on TB. Some were already doing something on HIV and AIDS, but they can still integrate some TB activities within their settings. And then we had a dialogue forum, which was supported by WHO. And then we did a service mapping and analysis of the TB services provided by all these organizations, looking at comparative advantages and competencies of some of these organizations. Some of these FBOs and NGOs were not doing anything on TB, but they had the potential to start doing something. So that in that dialogue, we're looking at what is the comparative advantage you have and what is the potential of doing some TB activities. Now, then after having agreed that everybody's playing a role and everyone is doing something somewhere, let's meet together now and prepare a plan to see what we need, resources, and looking at the partners themselves, their comparative strengths. We put them in clinical and non-clinical areas that, okay, some can do clinical activities, some can do non-clinical activities. And then after having agreed, we now started to have an agreement so that we develop. Now that we have saying we have agreed that we are forming this partnership, let's develop the core principles, goals, and objectives of this partnership. But what is important here is that has to follow the country's strategic direction. So we presented the country's strategic direction to the partners, and whoever wants to contribute and do some activities must follow that so that it is coordinated and it is uniform and it's off standard, so that we avoid everybody doing something anywhere. So we agreed with that, and then we then developed a partnership framework that, okay, this is how the partnership is going to be operating.
2 minutes.
Then after having agreed on that, we said now partners who were ready to implement, were commissioned to implement. Others were already implementing anyway, but it was a matter of not knowing what they are doing and in a very uncoordinated manner. And then now we say, how are we going to monitor and evaluate these activities of this partnership? We are still using the NTP indicators and monitoring tools. However, we are now in the process of developing an M&E component that is going to be specific for the partnership. What is it that we want to come up with? Obviously, we want to see an increased access to TB and TB and HIV services at all levels, down to the community level. And then in the health system, we want to see a strong national coalition of the response in the TB and HIV activities. So everybody taking part, whoever has got skills or competencies for certain portion of the problem must actually come on board. And then together as a coalition, mobilize resources for these partners, because some partners are willing to implement some activities, but they don't have even the basics in terms of resources, so we need to get some resources for them. And this we thought will bring more accountability to the NTP so that we improve the situation in the country, and I don't come back again here and present 42% treatment success and people think we are killing people. So that's the idea, so that we now really, even the partnership will say, now we are putting everything in place, but why are we not improving? So it will put us to be accountable.
1 minute.
But nonetheless, we already have a few achievements that I can mention here. We already have the full involvement of the government. The government has agreed on the framework that we have developed. We gave it to the ministry and they looked at it and it has been endorsed. We can start working on it. And then in principle, again, we have, as partnership, agreed on the framework to base the partnership on. And we have already submitted an integrated application for funds to Global Fund on round 8. It was that the NTP, together with the partners, making the application. Oh, well, obviously, those small achievements will come with some challenges. We still have a challenge. The partnership is still very young. It hasn't even finished a year. But we are already thinking ahead on how we are going to sustain it, because a partnership is very delicate. You need to make sure that you maintain it all the time. And in the partnership, we want to be equal, but definitely there will be small partners in terms of the activities they are implementing. Others will be coming with the funding. But then the challenge is to make sure that everybody feels part of that partnership. And then we still have this challenge to make sure that the activities are implemented in a coordinated manner so that the NTP still remains responsible for the activities and make sure that they're implemented according to the national guidelines and standards. And again, even though we have applied to Global Fund, it's just the beginning. We need to continuously make sure that we mobilize funds for these partners, because we don't want to see a situation where a partner has been doing a very good job and then all of a sudden that partner is not there when the people have already, you know, getting used to that service within that partner. Then the next step, we want to formally launch the partnership. I've said in principle we have agreed, but we need to bring everybody and then launch the partnership. We still have a problem of housing the partnership, where we're going to coordinate the activities of the partnership. And then, again, the mobilization of funds and advocacy. We want to advocate for more political commitment. Here, as you could see, the indicators I showed in the beginning, this should be an emergency. So we want the country to really declare TB an emergency so that we can really, you know, access funds in a very extraordinary manner so that we can address those huge challenges I mentioned in the beginning. And then we are planning to review the implementation of the plan after 1 year, which is February next year. Siyabonga, thank you very much. That's all I can say.
Thank you. The next speaker, Ezio Santos Filho from Brazil. In reverse, okay. Cristina Barreto from Brazil.
We will divide our presentation into short parts. I will speak from the governmental perspective, and as we speak from the civil society perspective. Uh, Brazil is a large country situated in Latin America. Has a population around 108 million people, including lots of local diversities in a huge continental dimension. 8.5 million kilometers, 189 million people, 80,000 TB cases a year, and I added 315 MDR cases per year. That's not here, but I think it's interesting to know. 94,000 cases are estimated by WHO in 2007. 70% of the cases are concentrated in 315 municipalities. 5,000 TB deaths per year. 20% of all TB deaths are among aged patients. During the last few years, the TB incidence rate in Brazil shows a slow decrease, as you can see, and it's around 40 deaths per 100 million. The mortality rate, as well as the incidence rate, shows the same tendency of slow decrease. The last rate in 2006 was 2.5 deaths per 100 million people. The Brazilian healthcare system provides free and universal access to all Brazilians based on the primary health care, in which 80 million people are covered by the Family Health Care Program. SUS, as it is called, is a public health composed by 64,000 ambulatory health services, 45,000 of them are primary health care units, and 5,800 hospital units. It is the historical tendency which shows the implementation increase of the family health program in the municipalities. Nowadays, around 100% of municipalities has this program, although, unfortunately, the program is not yet accessed by everyone. The public health care system is composed by one National Health Council, 27 federal state councils, and 5,642 district councils. Each municipality has its district council. These councils are combined by governmental institutions, healthcare professional entities, and civil society, which are responsible for analyzing, deliberating, and monitoring public health policies. As a result of this composition, we can obtain an interactive and inclusive healthcare system that helps decrease social, gender, and racial inequities. Why it's so important to engage all partners, né? National AIDS Program Experience. O Brasil has a large governmental experience on prevention and care policies. The public health system introduced the human rights discussion as a value. This process contributes to strengthen the national response to HIV AIDS epidemic. We can say that a grand percentage of such experience is due to governmental initiative to strengthen civil society organizations implementing and monitor the AIDS program. For example, CAMS, a commission of social movement composed by 20 entities, created by the government to extend the participation and the dialogue to other social movements, like homeless people, student movements, and Afro society on AIDS issues. A national TB program experience. The Tuberculosis National Program control to global funding context stimulate and strengthen the civil society and faith-based organization movement with the objective of extending the access to healthcare services and improving the quality of them. The participation of non-governmental organizations contributes in fighting against the stigma and prejudice that patients with HIV and tuberculosis are submitted to. They work together with the healthcare service and in social space like churches, schools, community centers, and etc. In order to give a better view of two diseases, mitigating prejudice and facilitating prevention and the early detection. We can all show the Brazilian Stop TB partnerships as an example of a network partnerships that joins 88 representative organizations of several social segments fighting against tuberculosis. They support governmental actions with scientific knowledge, experience, and financial resources. In conclusion, I can say that the civil society participation in the healthcare system can increase access and improve quality to the services. Due to it, this participation helps to increase citizenship and democracy among society.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now, Ezio Santo Filho from Brazil.
I'm not going to do a slides presentation. I'll try to make it a little more live. And actually, this room is perfect for MDR replication. And so we should do some infection control and open the doors because this is horribly warm here. Although I come from a tropical country, I mean, this I hate locked and doors and windows. And we are working with TB. We should not have that. I mean, I suggest we open the doors. The idea of the obstacles we are facing regarding the establishment of the partnership in Brazil is the fact that we have to have in mind that we have, as Christina showed, a huge country, which, to give you an idea for the Europeans at least, I mean that Brazil, I mean the entire Europe, Scandinavia included, could fit in the country. So, and Brazil itself is larger than the continental U.S. if you exclude Alaska, and the country is really has several different regions and realities, and we have the challenge of dealing with so many differences. Although most of the TB epidemic is concentrated in large metropolitan areas, and we have been having kind of a difficulty until 2004, I would say, to have a clear policy towards tuberculosis, which I pointed out in the report I released here in Paris in 2006 during the conference about the TB policies. I mean, the TB policies in Brazil until 2003, I would say at least they were extremely confusing because since 1999, it was suggesting that DOTS should be implemented, but most of people would not be willing to implement DOTS in the country. The idea was that we have had the chance to change key individuals in some aspects, and the policies since 2004 have improved immensely. And because of this new scenario, we could have a field for cooperation that allowed Brazil, for example, to create a CCM that designed the Brazil TB project to the Global Fund, which is now being implemented. It's almost in the by the March will be the end of the second year. That's a 1.5 year implementation, and the creation of the partnership in November 2004. I think Brazil, if not the oldest partnership in the world, local partner, it's one of the. The secretary of the partnership is sitting here, Ana Glória Pires, and I will focus in the few minutes that I would like to bring to you. The idea is this: how you build this partnership. I would like to remind also, well, one presentation that I did 2 years ago here in Paris as well, complaining about the situation of the partnership. Because at the time, the partnership was formed by a few institutions and some private agencies, but basically the partnership would be funded by the government only. So it's a very unequal. It was a very unequal partnership where the government puts the money. Even international private agencies would be participating in that, but would not put a penny, not even to pay their tickets to go to a meeting. So, so the government was paying the whole bill, and this is not a kind of a fair partnership. I think this bill has to be shared with partners. And what has been done in the last years is that we started to increase partnering with different actors, and so we improved a lot the partnering with the academia. There is no need. I mean, well, I should highlight that in Brazil we have a huge social mobilization, and I started doing the first social mobilization back in 2002 in Brazil, and then we created the Forum of TB NGOs in Rio, and then in other opportunities, and the Global Fund project has created recently what's so-called the metropolitan committees for the Global Fund, and there are activists in all the metropolitan areas which are focused, which have roughly the half of the charge of the burden of TB in the country is concentrated there, and we have community participants in all these committees. So there is a huge social mobilization. I think that the scenario changed completely since 2002 to nowadays. I mean, in 2002, when I started, we started with ground zero. There was no mobilization. Nobody was talking about TB, and there was no political willingness. I remember a meeting I had with some representatives of the National TB Program at the time, that they said they were not willing to have activists putting their nose into TB. I mean, that was a statement that I heard in Brasilia back in 2003. That means 5 years ago. So that shows how the picture changed. But the thing is that we changed a lot, so I am extremely optimistic. The partnership now has 8 segments. We have the governmental segment that includes all the 3 levels of government, federal, state, and municipal level. We have the 2 NGO segments, an NGO for activism, and the other one that we call care. And these 2 segments also include PWAs and people affected by TB. We have the private sector, we have academia, we have faith-based organizations, and we have the labor unions, and we have international institutions such as bilateral and multilateral agencies. And the idea is to be engaging other partners and to contribute in that and to start working in other fields. Because I think that we should highlight that, repeat was something that Cristina has posed in her presentation, that Brazil has a unified healthcare system. So in the public sector in Brazil, anybody who comes to the private sector doesn't spend a penny. And it doesn't matter if you are a taxpayer or if you are a foreigner living in Brazil illegally, you have full access to treatment, no matter how much it will cost. It can be a very expensive AIDS treatment or a cancer treatment. You are not supposed to present any contribution. So it's a universal healthcare system. And another excellent aspect about Brazil is that TB medication is not available in private pharmacies. So if you need TB medication, you have to go to the public system. You can even be treated by a private, if you have the money, you may go to a private clinician, but he or she will have to prescribe for you, and you have to go to the public clinic, enroll yourself, get listed, and then get the medication, because you won't find any isoniazid or rifampicin, or you may find some rifampicin or etambutol in some pharmacies, but it's not likely to. So, I mean, a TB medication is that, and that's one of the reasons why we have such a low prevalence of MDR-TB. But the thing is that also, as you presented earlier, I mean, it's a role of the state to monitor the services. And Brazil, although it has universal access, it's among the 22 high burden countries. And why is that? It's because services are bad, and because policies are not clearly implemented. This has started to change back in 2004, but this means only 4 years. And for a country in the size of ours, and with the disparities and differences, we have to deal with several obstacles that make this integration more difficult. But basically, the idea is that we do not want to replicate any effort. I think all the scenario that we have now, which is absolutely different than a few years ago, like having a TB project, which is acting to expand TB in the 11 metropolitan areas, which has basically the half off the burden of the country. We have social mobilization throughout the country. We have clear policies by the Ministry of Health. We have engagement of at the state and municipal level. We have private sector starting to together. Is the idea that we can share and multiply these efforts, working together, but not trying to create a scenario of restrictions and political restrictions. So we have we are moving forward quite fast. I'm very optimistic about our future. I believe Brazil will be soon leaving the list of high burden countries, but hopefully we are not going to jump into the high MDR countries, but our rates will be, I mean, the national inquiry is not ready yet, but we are not going to be jumping into the MDR list. So I think these are some ideas that I would like to bring to you, and I wish we have at least 5 minutes discussion. But I would like just to point out something that you also mentioned, which is very important, regarding the faith-based organizations. I think they are crucial, and they have been always crucial in the fights against AIDS. The faith-based organizations deliver services much more than any most of the states in the developing world. They are crucial, and we have to partnership with them. But one of the reasons why they receive 5% of the funding, it's because they are self-funded. They are self-funded, and they have also the faith-based organizations have their own agenda, which is not wrong. On the contrary, everybody has its agenda. Any institution, any government, any agency, any faith-based organization, any activist, everybody has an agenda. But the thing is that we have to never see the other partner as a potential threat or a potential obstacle, but we should really try to partner with others that we are not used. In Brazil, for example, we have a huge prejudice against partnering with the private sector. I mean, the governmental sector has real obstacles to partner with the private sector, and constitutionally in the country, it's a duty of the state to provide service health care. So when you try to fundraise in any private institution, they say, well, this is a state obligation. We should not put a penny because the state should provide that. This is constitutionally said. So that's the point. So we have to partner and learn from the different perspectives how we can move forward. Hope we can have at least some few minutes of discussion. Cheers.
Thank you. Yes, we have about 4 minutes left, and before I can make some closing comments, if there's any questions for any of the speakers, please come up.
You need to come to the mic.
Please, would you come up to the microphone? Would you come up to the microphone, please, so we can hear your question and also for the video? Please, we'd love for you to come up. Please come up after Dr. Lembrix. Yeah. No. She's the gentleman behind you also had a question.
I want to say I was really impressed by the talks and especially by the example given by the systematic approach to partnering in Swaziland, but also by the call by Juliana about the need, I mean, the role of the Stop TB partnership, WHO, in coordinating partners. And I have some recent experiences in countries where partners, international partners, with the best intentions, put teams, come with a lot of money, and it's very difficult for the government, even if they feel ownership, to tell those partners who bring so much money to build capacity within the framework, the national plans which have been mentioned, and not allowing them to have their own agenda. I was in a country with 4 international partners investing in lab capacity building, not within the framework of a laboratory network approach in that country, not even within the concept of MDR-TB case finding within that country. A fifth partner said, I don't want to involve anymore because we are not bringing money, we're bringing expertise, but they don't need us anymore. And I just today I heard that a sixth partner brought in $2 million and takes over some of the responsibilities already taken up by this international partnership within the country. I mean, so it's very difficult for MOH, I mean, for countries to resist the money coming in. And although I fully support your call for the Stop TB partnership, the question is, who is going to force those partners to really collaborate? So I would say that at the board meeting and within our discussions with donors, we should require from partners that if they step into a country, they sit at least together, discuss their agendas, and then together discuss with the governments. We have the CCMs, but there are too many countries which are becoming an unsustainable mess because of so well-intended but, you know, conflicting agendas. Thank you.
Thank you for this question. I will try to provide perhaps a beginning of answer. I think we could say, based on the experiences that are ongoing at this point in time, that we have 2 cornerstones for a partnering process. The first one is really building the vision, is really the dialogue about the vision. The dialogue about the vision of the partnership means that at any given time during the life of the partnership, whenever there is an issue, people have to go back to those principles and understand why they decided to work together and for what purpose. I participated, and I was quite impressed, in the first partnering meeting in Swaziland, that it would be also important to know for all of you here that after a single visit that we paid to Swaziland, the process has been going on its own, including the preparation of legal documents and so on. It was impressive to see how there are partners that come to the dialogue, to the meeting, saying we will be able to avail such an amount of financial resources. At partners, they say, we have absolutely no financial resources, but we have the human resources. So the two understand that alone they can do nothing, because even money alone can do nothing. But together they can achieve something. And the second cornerstone is a plan, a national plan that should be agreed upon. The point is, it's no longer possible that the plan is designed only by the government, but people should be involved right at the time of designing the plan and then, of course, in the implementation.
And the last comment, please.
Thank first to my brother from Swaziland. I think, keep it up. I think the Chinese say, don't be scared to move slowly, but to be static. If you're not moving, then there's a problem. But if you're moving slowly, it's okay. Then, as you are doing your plans, I think don't forget the baseline. Most of us have had these interventions, then we go back, we find that we don't have the baseline data. Then what are we achieving? How is our roadmap? My question is, you have received Global Fund. What has the Global Fund impacted probably on your TB data? And what's your strategy in terms of the immigrants? I know Swaziland is surrounded by both Mozambique this side and South Africa, where you have a lot of MDR, with due respect to my next door neighbor there. And then to my colleague from Brazil, not having the drag in the private sector. Now we're talking about the triple P, you know, the private, is it public-private partnership. Don't you create an area for black marketeering where you go somewhere and then you end up looking for this drug somewhere because you don't want to go to the public sector? Thank you.
Perhaps we could have some quick comments and then you can continue outside.
Thank you. The first question on the Global Fund, we got Global Fund round three, and we have actually made some tremendous strides. Looking at those figures, appalling as they look, but if you look where we're coming from in the last 2 years, we're at 19% of the case of treatment success, and 2 years later we're at 42%. And mainly we had the main financial assistance we're getting from Global Fund, but we are seeing a lot of other partners now coming in after having seen that we have such a big problem. Coming into the handling of the cross-border issues, with Mozambique, we signed a memorandum of understanding that Swazis who go to Mozambique will be treated free of charge for TB, and same with Mozambicans in Swaziland. But we do have some bit of problems with Mozambique because they speak Portuguese, and there's a bit of a problem there. But with South Africa, we really have a good relationship. If a patient leaves South Africa for Swaziland, they notify the NTP, and then we go to trace the patient if it doesn't show up, and then vice versa when they're going to South Africa. I think those are the two questions you mm-hmm. had for me.
Would you like to address the comment about Brazil?
About the partnering, well, that's what we are trying to improve. But regarding the private services, I think that's not an issue. I mean, the majority of people affected by TB in Brazil are poor. And we want to keep the unified healthcare system going, actually growing and being more stabilized and being more effective. That's what we want. I mean, the principal client for purchase of medication in Brazil is the state. Basically, the state purchases the medication for TB and it distributes it them. And many of the medication is nationally produced by public laboratories. And somehow we want to keep that way. I mean, obviously, there will be medication for MDR and TB that we will have to import, but we obviously are in process of negotiations. But basically, when we talk about public health, large public health programs and provision of medication, such as the HIV and AIDS program, it's funded by the state. I mean, and it would, I mean, who would pay for something which is free and it's available on the shelter of a public health clinic? And it's nobody does that. I mean, if you can get the medication for free, why should you pay for that? I mean, it is there. So this is, but again, what we want to do is to enhance and empower and make the unified health system go further. Thank you.
Thank you. And Dr. Gebhardt wanted to make one more comment, and then we'll close.
Yeah, I would like to go one step further on the point just raised by Kitty and answered by you. The point of the pivotal point in the management of partnerships is a strategic plan. I think that has been agreed upon all us. But the point of a strategic plan is also that it should not be too rigid. The partnership should be able to absorb new partners and to adjust activities towards the needs, towards new needs, and to absorb new money. So if you have you were very rightly talking about the partnership management, which usually would consist of meetings every 2 times a year or something with representatives of those partners, in which the strategic plan, the long-term plan, can be revised. And if you are able to revise the plan in a structured manner, then if another partner comes in, like the 2 million just referred at, then they can be referred to that next meeting. And they join the partnership and they sign up to the plan. I also know it's not always that easy, but we have some experience with the running of those partnerships or participating in those partnerships in different countries. And really, the clue to this all is regular meeting and regular revision of your plans.
Okay, thank you. Well, if we could have questions after the discussion, we have to wrap up. And I just want to thank everyone for participating. We've had the opportunity to hear about a series of experiences with their own richness and detail, but there are some common themes, and I just wanted to highlight one that seems important to mention that perhaps is going to be a permanent challenge for all these partnerships, is to make sure that the key participants, the key actors, are at the table or are invited newly to the table as partnerships evolve. And these, of course, include and must include the governments, whose authority is not replaceable by any other actors, and actors that have deep and continuous reach into the lives of patients and their communities. And, of course, agencies that may be able to connect programs or providers to specialized technical resources. And finally, of course, activists who can be watchdogs and keep all of us honest in our partnerships. So there's many lessons to be gathered from these experiences, but there are certainly many more to learn together. And on behalf of all the coordinators, we want to thank you, and we wish you the best in all your partnerships.